guess, where it becomes a pipe dream at this point. So I'm not sure just what will develop.
It's already worn a lot of faces, it sounds like.
Yeah, it has. It's a wonderful building.
What, with the Upward Bound program you're describing, working with the disadvantaged youth, what were the program? Is it alternative schooling to the regular school district?
Yeah.
So what was the, what does the programming look like there?
Well, they had the regular courses, history and science and everything, and they took a special type of teacher in there to be able to teach, because they had to demand the discipline and things with the students. As I say, it was an alternative, but it was funded apparently by all the different, they would bring the children in from Worcester, from Milford, from Oneonta, Cherry Valley. They would bus these children in to the school. So as far as I know, all those school districts paid in for the students. And finally, they built this an addition over to Milford School, and they lured them over there into the program with, I guess, all kind of promises, and they thought that they were going to go to a newer school with the administrators of the Upward Bound, anyway, thought. As I say, they lured them in there, and because, again, they needed numbers to justify the addition over to the Milford School. And when they got over there, it wasn't 6 months before they got rid of the teachers and incorporated the kids, I guess, just into the regular classes. So the kids, again, fell by the wayside. They fell through the cracks, and they could justify it because they needed numbers to fill the new addition, and they talked like in Oneonta, well, they could do the same thing down in the regular schools in Oneonta. They could have night courses for these kids, and they could do this and do that. Well, that was a lot of malarkey, and it was, these kids had nobody to speak up for them. The parents, whatever parents there were, there was nobody going to go to the school board and argue to keep the school or anything else. They were nobodies, and so that, as I say, it just fell by the wayside, and the teachers that were in there were gone within a year, and they I guess the kids were just incorporated, but it was the same form as before. They were just in with a group of other kids, and I imagine they fell through the cracks like they were before.
So you've done all this work on behalf of the Hartwick schools. You've been involved in a lot of different planning boards, town boards, and things like that. So you've always been involved with the community here, and now you serve as the judge, as the justice for the town.
Right.
Can you tell me about how you decided to move into that for your career?
Well, as I say, I had spent 20 years almost 30 years in law enforcement, and it's tied right in with law enforcement. It's you're on the other side of the bench, so to speak. Before, you were on one side of the bench. Now you take the job and you're on the other side of the bench. And you see things different, I suppose. Maybe I'm just becoming more liberal as I get older, which I guess isn't so bad. I like the idea of law enforcement. I like the idea of the justice system, and I like working with people. And a lot of times this gives me a chance to look at some of the defendants and, you know, try to work with them and work for them. Before I was just on the arresting side and didn't see what happened after you'd arrest somebody and throw them in jail or give them a ticket or whatever. But this here gives the, as I say, the opposite side, and you're faced with dealing with it. And you deal with a lot of people, especially younger people, that don't have a lot. They're on the fallen through the cracks of society, so to speak, so you get a chance to, you know, see that side of things and to work with it, you get to make a recommendation, and you have a say on what happens to them. The way the courts are set up, the defense attorney and the judge all have the responsibility to making the decision, and so the defense attorney and the prosecutor can get together and make come up with an agreement, but unless the judge agrees to it, that agreement is no good, and vice versa, you know. So it takes all three, and some of the judges aren't very forceful, I suppose, and very don't use their the powers that they have as far as being a third party. They too often seem to go along just with the DA and defense attorney's recommendations. And for me, I use that right, and I, you know, will deny or object and refuse to an agreement if I don't think it's right. So I like that, being able to do that, and things. So that's part of it, and as I say, the main thing is that fairness. You've got to be fair, even though you may personally dislike somebody that's in front of you. You don't show it, and you try to neutralize your attitude and things. And if it's you have too much of a feeling that way, then you recuse yourself and you let some other judge handle it. But if you can't be fair, then you shouldn't be sitting on the bench. That's what you've got to, you know, always keep in mind. It's a form of helping people, because you know, you can either make their life a little bit more bearable, or you can make it unbearable. And for them, I suppose, but your job isn't there to make it unbearable. It's interesting. It keeps you in tune with the law enforcement part that you were used to begin with. I guess that's it.
What are some of the types of cases that you're regularly seeing in the role as judge?
You never know. The town justices handle everything that comes through. If it's a murder, or if it's a burglary, or if it's a speeding ticket, family disputes, you handle everything from a violation to a felony. With the violations and the misdemeanors, you handle that all the way through from the time it comes into your court till it's finalized. With the felonies, you just handle the initial arraignments. You arraign them, and you have perhaps a hearing, and then it's supposed to go to the county court. It's supposed to be transferred to the county court, but a lot of times the county court will reduce it to a misdemeanor So that felony becomes a misdemeanor and it stays in your court. And so you can, as I say, you can initially handle everything. And a lot of things are domestic issues there between boyfriends, girlfriends, families. So you know, you're there to mediate to some extent, I guess. We do orders of protections and things like this for people that are having problems that they want somebody to stay away, keep away. We handle all that, as I say, right down to barking dogs or just had one where a person sicked his dog on a cat, neighbor's cat, and killed the cat and brought him in on that. So as I say, we handle a lot of this stuff. Everything that occurs in the town comes into our court. Sometimes other stuff that comes in from the other towns, I end up because the other judges aren't available. So they'll call you at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 or 4 in the morning and want an arraignment on somebody, DWI, whatever it might be.
Does that happen frequently, those middle of the night calls?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially if you're gullible enough to answer the phone where the other judges where the other judges don't want to answer the phone, they don't want to get up. So they know who to call because I never refuse a call. And sometimes they come in spurts and then other times it's weeks or months and you won't get a call. So it's you never can tell. Sundays, Saturdays, Sundays, you're there pretty much 24 hours a day. Last 2 days ago, Saturday there, I had a arraignment for loaded guns in a car, two hunters that were hunting with the loaded guns in a car. So, as I say, it doesn't matter what time it is, whether it's a Saturday or Sunday, you're going to get the call.
What was that like when you were running for town justice the first time and then the re-election processes that you go through every term?
Kind of a small type of campaign. You just let people know you know, sometimes you go to house to house to meet people and things, and we have to when our term is up and we are doing up for re-election, you have to obtain X amount of names in the town to get on the party, to get on the ticket. And so you go house to house and you get their signatures and on your petition. And at that time, you meet a lot of people. And I really enjoy that. I've met people that way that I never would have met before. And I usually hear, well, I've heard about you. Yeah, I don't know you. I've never met you, but I've heard about you. And I understand you do a good job, you're fair, whatever, and that's always nice to hear. But I enjoy that. Usually I will run on, even though there's no opposition, I don't have to get a lot of signatures because there's nobody opposing me. But I run on the Republican ticket now. And if there's nobody on a Democratic ticket, I'll run and get the signatures that I need for that, or the conservative and ticket. And mostly, as I say, I don't need to, but it gives me a chance to meet the people and things there. So I enjoy that, and other people say, oh, they don't do that. They just get the required numbers that they need. And I say, well, I like to try to get out to the people that aren't in immediate neighborhood, Toddsville or Hartwick Seminary area, that's just still in the town of Hartwick, but we don't interact with Toddsville very much to a large extent, or we don't interact with 28 there in Hartwick Seminary and things. And so other than this, I wouldn't, as I say, I wouldn't meet these people. And they, that way they know me, and they at least, you know, other than a name.
You mentioned that you see yourself getting more liberal as time goes on. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know if you want me to get into politics, but I was always a Republican because of my parents, I guess, were Republican, and I've gotten away from that, I guess, after George Bush's administration. I got away from that entirely and found myself more in the camp of the Democrats, who have a reputation of being liberal, of course, but I more and more tend to side with their thinking, I guess, because I realized that, I guess, when I was with the state police and things when I was younger, and everything was black and white, I guess, to a large extent. Now I'm seeing more of the gray than the black and white, and I see the people and understand society is, you know, not as black and white as I would have liked to have seen it, it's hard to decide between what's right and what's wrong, and I see things a lot more that I didn't see before, such as the inconsistencies, the inaccuracy of everything, and the what's right and what's wrong and things. So I guess I'm not quite the Archie Bunker that I used to be, and that I guess I used to be, and so as I say, I see things different as I get older, and I think a lot of people, it is a natural thing for them to see things different. They call it mellowing out, I guess. We mellow as we get older, but I think we have a broader view of things instead of the narrow view of things, and I think that we do have a more liberal view because it's a broader view, and maybe it's part of mellowing, but I think it's because we get wiser, and sometimes I don't know if it's good that we get wiser as we get older, because we get more dissatisfied with the politics, the way things are set up as far as right and wrong, and I guess we get more confused that way too, because we don't see it as I say black and white, and I think we have more empathy for people as we get older.
What are there specific issues that are the ones that you would have previously described as feeling more black and white about, and now you're seeing more the gray or the colors in between?
Yeah, and I don't know how much I want to get into it, but I don't see very much. I don't see very much right in the world. I'm very discouraged with like the national politics, the right of, you know, what we're doing as a country. I don't believe in the country the way I guess I used to, as far as that we are so almighty good, and what we're doing is so almighty good that we're the first in this, and we're first in this in the world, and first of that. I seem to see behind the scenes more, I guess, and see the corruption, the fact that what we do is in the name of greed and power. And so these issues bother me, and I always hope that we're going to get a new administration that will, you know, as we go along, make the country really good like it says it is. But there is very little, I think, very little honesty and fairness in the world as far as the way we treat other people in this country and in the world. I don't understand it. I it's hard for me to grasp why humans have to kill humans and why humans can be so inhuman. So I guess that's some of my concerns. I think I'm just seeing behind the scenes, and what I see behind the scenes of the workings I don't like. And it's not a simple black and white issue. It's very complicated and very sometimes very corrupt, I guess. We say we're doing the right thing and that we're doing this and that, but really what we're only doing is lying in somebody's pockets and the greed and the corruption, power struggle and things there. So those are the things that bother me. Things like this hydrofracking is one issue that I really, really dread. And I think it's the worst thing that I've seen happen in my lifetime. I know what it's going to do. It's just going to destroy the environment. It's going to destroy the water. It's going to destroy the air and the ground. And all in the name of greed, because people like Halliburton and President Bush and the rest of them, you know, had control, and they made these rules, and they don't care what the side effects are as long as they're making money. And I just can't, you know, why do we need this oil? Why do we need this gas? Why do we need, you know, why don't we conserve, first of all? Why don't we leave something in the ground for reserve for our children and our grandchildren? We're living in a fairly good economy now. Why do we have to deplete our natural resources for our own greed, so that Halliburton's and other companies can line their pockets, leave it in the ground for next 50 years or whatever, you know, have it for a reserve for the future generations? But we don't know how to conserve. We don't, you know, all we want is more, more, more. And the politicians work it around so that these corporations, you know, make money. And those are the kind of things that, you know, I see now that I probably didn't see 30 years ago. So I guess we change, as I say. I guess I've changed anyway through the years, and it bothers me that years ago I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh, and now I can't believe I did such a thing. And I don't know if you're familiar with Rush Limbaugh, but you know, you talk about a narrow-minded halfwit. As I say, I just can't believe that I was one of those people that listened to him every week or every day, every so often, and it's like a different world for me now. So I have become liberal, I guess.
Well, believe it or not, we are running a little bit short on time now. I just have one more question I wanted to ask you in this regard. With these ideas that you've just discussed about on the national and the global level of politics and how the world is, how do you personally, How do you reconcile that and bring your ideas and mentalities to try to affect change on the local level with your job as justice here?
I don't think that I'm going to have any influence at that level. I think all I can do is to do what I can do on the local level as far as the job that I do. I am not going to be part of what I see on the national level, say to speak or something, but I'm just going to do what I can do and do it fairly, treat the people fair, and try to keep the fines to a minimum where I can, where it's justified. And as I tell the state and things, that I remind them that I'm not a source of revenue for the state. That is not my job. My job is to do justice and treat people as human beings and as fairly as I can. And that's other than that, I don't see it expanding anywhere beyond the local level. As I say, all I can do is just my little part by being a fair judge and trying to keep it within my sights there.
Well, maybe if every town justice in every little town in America just keeps doing their part, then that way we can affect some kind of greater change that way.
I hope so. I hope so.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I guess not. Just that I appreciate the opportunity to be able to work with you on this, and I hope that other people will contribute, and that you get to them, and like you've got to me before we kick the bucket, and don't have anything to contribute to you. So, as I say, I hope that your program will expand. I know there's a lot of people that out there that should be recorded and have their part and the say of, you know, what they've experienced during their lifetime.
Well, on behalf of Cooperstown Graduate Program, you're very welcome, and thank you so much for sharing your stories with us.
Thank you.